For the last 2 years, bipartisan legislation has been introduced in the State House to repeal mandatory minimum sentences for drug offenses here in Idaho. If you are not familiar with mandatory minimums, here's how they work. Idaho's drug trafficking laws do not require actual selling, only possession. So if you commit a drug trafficking offense that triggers a sentence, even if you have no prior record and you are not selling drugs, you automatically get between 1 to 15 years in prison, depending upon the volume and the type of drugs involved. Idaho adopted these mandatory minimum sentences back in 1992 with the belief that if potential offenders knew drug sentences would be harsh and unavoidable, they would refrain from using and trafficking drugs. With 25 years of data in hand now, there are some Idaho lawmakers who argue mandatory minimums do not work. Joining me live in studio to talk more about this and the plan to bring another bipartisan bill to the State House this legislative session is Representative Alana Rubel. Welcome to the program.
Great to be here.
So, Representative Rubel, talk to me about the idea behind mandatory minimums in the sense that when this was put in place back in the early 90s, the whole idea was that, A, it would stop people from doing this, but you would also get those big, quote, kingpin drug traffickers behind bars.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There were two rationales initially. One was deterrence, as you noted, kind of sending a message that when people see these super strict, totally unavoidable sentences, they will decide to not do drugs or not sell drugs in Idaho. The other part, interestingly, was it was intended to be an incentive for people to rat out those further up the chain. The original statute had a provision in it that said they could deviate from the mandatory minimum sentences. A judge could give a different sentence if the person served as an informant for those big-time dealers that were the big suppliers. That got stripped out of statute. The Supreme Court said that part was unconstitutional, so that actually got yanked out. So there is now no out. There is no way you can get out of the mandatory minimum, regardless of how much you cooperate with prosecutors and who you disclose on up the chain. So I guess the only piece we're left with is this theoretical argument for deterrence.
Right. And what's interesting to me, and you handed me this right before the show, is crimes in Idaho with mandatory minimums and crimes with what we call discretionary sentencing, which means it's to a judge's discretion. There are four crimes in the state of Idaho that have mandatory minimums: first-degree murder, repeated sexual abuse of a child, aggravated DUI causing grievous bodily harm, and drug trafficking.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's exactly right. This is not normally how we treat crimes in Idaho. Idaho generally trusts its judges. And in the overwhelming majority of crimes, almost any crime you can think of, including very, very serious crimes, including, you know, arson, rape, attempted murder, human trafficking, cannibalism, almost any crime that you can name is left to the discretion of a judge, where they can look at the particulars of the crime and the defendant and the circumstances and decide what sentence best meets that case. The way we treat drug trafficking, which is really, as you know, drug possession, because there's no requirement that anybody sell or even have intent to sell drugs. You just have to have it on your person. Mm-hmm. The way we treat that with this absolutely strict mandatory sentencing requirement is a real aberration in how we normally address crimes in Idaho.
And getting back to the point where we talk about a judge's discretion, when it comes to a mandatory minimum, a judge has to enforce at least the mandatory minimum, which sometimes is 1 year. But as we said in the introduction, there are people who come forward who are charged with a drug trafficking crime for possession, no type of criminal history.
Right.
And there is a mandatory minimum. And beyond that, this is bipartisan. I want to make that very clear.
Very bipartisan. Well, as you note, I mean, the vast bulk of these folks, they're about 375 people on these sentences right now in Idaho, and it's costing the state approximately $10 million a year to keep them incarcerated. But yeah, 82% of them have no violent record whatsoever, so are considered nonviolent offenders by the Department of Corrections. And about 40% of them have no prior record, no prior felony conviction in Idaho.
So since you brought this forward, you and Representative Christy Perry, the last 2 years on a bipartisan bill.
Yeah.
And this year you are planning to do this again with Representative Brian Zollinger out of Idaho Falls. And you've been working with the Idaho Freedom Foundation, a incredibly conservative organization, as well as the ACLU about this.
Yeah.
This is a very bizarre group of individuals working together. And what I mean by bizarre is that you normally do not have the Idaho Freedom Foundation and a Democrat representative like yourself and the ACLU all coming together and saying, yes, this needs to change.
That's right. And I hope people take from that that there is a real due process concern here, because this is where right meets left, because our current law makes zero sense in any sense of the word. I mean, it certainly makes no fiscal sense to be sending away, you know, somebody who may have no prior offenses, no history of violence. The judges don't want to send them away in many cases. You'll find transcripts where the judges are saying on the record, this is absolutely ridiculous that I have to send you away for this long sentence. If I had any other option, I would do something different. I would try to get you into rehab or a shorter sentence or probation, but the legislature has tied my hands and gives me no option. You hear about families being destroyed by this and just devastated. Parents and grandparents were testifying, but it's also costing us a huge amount of money. So altogether, it's been a really wonderful opportunity for bipartisan work and the opposite ends of the ideological spectrum to come together. But yeah, I'm planning to bring it again with bipartisan sponsorship. It passed through the House, and you know we have a very Republican House.
Mm-hmm.
It passed through the House with a supermajority last year. So this has had strong support from both sides of the aisle, because when you hear it all and when you hear from every side of it, from the prosecutors and the police and the families and the defense attorneys, we had everybody in the room. We've had 12 hours of hearings on this. Really, the overwhelming majority of people think these laws have got to go. We need to give judges some ability, at least in those extreme outlying cases where it's simply insane to give these sentences to a person. We have to give them that wiggle room to give a different sentence.
I'm speaking with State Representative Elena Rubel. We're talking about mandatory minimum sentences here in the state of Idaho. So you said last year passed with a supermajority. But what happened then? Because you are still going to be bringing this back this year.
Right. Well, it's had a bit of a history on this. The first year we brought it in the House and we had an informational hearing only on it with no vote. And we had 4 hours of testimony that time. But the legislators on the committee were telling me, boy, I wish we could have voted. We would have passed it. The second year we brought it back to the House committee, 8 hours of hearings that time, took a vote, passed it strongly through committee, passed it strongly through the floor, went over to the Senate. And the Senate chair said, well, I don't want to let you have a vote on this. Let's just do an informational hearing. So we had a very short informational hearing on the Senate side where the legislators were not permitted to take a vote. So I'm hoping this year we get a hearing and a vote on both sides of the chamber.
And speaking of that, you know, outside of the legislators, like you said, you have met with prosecutors, public defenders, law enforcement. Where is everyone standing on this, but also the judiciary, because they are ultimately the ones that, that arguably we could say their hands are tied.
Yeah, as I said, many judges are very unhappy with this situation. But it's an interesting situation. We have these public transcripts where you can see judges going on the record in particular sentencing hearings. And we collected a pile of those where they were saying, you know, this is crazy. You're a 20-year-old with no priors. It's just going to ruin your life. And I wish I didn't have to do this. I certainly had private conversations with judges who say, yes, those mandatory minimums have got to go. If we're capable of crafting a sentence for every other crime on the book, we are capable of crafting a sentence for drug offenses. You know, we can tell the difference between a serious drug dealer and a kid who made a stupid mistake on the first time. And we will throw the book at the people who need the book thrown at them, and we'll lock them away for way more than the mandatory minimum where it's warranted. But they're not allowed to come forth. They can't really come forth and testify. They have to maintain neutrality, and they can't come in and testify. So, you know, we don't know officially in committee what they would say because they haven't been permitted to. But certainly my back channels tell me that I think judges would welcome this power that they have in all other cases.
And what about prosecutors, defense attorneys, law enforcement? Are they in agreement with this overall?
No. I mean, the prosecutors certainly oppose this. And a good number of law enforcement oppose it as well. Your defense attorneys are strongly in favor. Sort of people are scattered all over the board. What it does right now is it really changes the power dynamic. It's completely shifted power from judges to prosecutors because the only thing a judge is allowed to look at is the volume of drugs on the person. And if it's X number of grams, you have to go away for 5 years or 10 years or 15 years. They can't look at any other circumstances, whether this person, again, was just an addict for personal use or whether they were otherwise, you know, totally clean record, straight A student, 18-year-old. There's not one other thing they can look at other than the volume. But it does give prosecutors a tremendous amount of power in the process because they become the ultimate decider of what the sentence will be. Whatever charge they decide to bring is what it will be. And it's a tremendous tool in terms of obtaining plea bargains. And the defense attorneys basically came out with this and said, you know, we're completely over a barrel. All we can do is go crawling to the prosecutor and ask for mercy. And maybe they, in their decision, will decide to be merciful in the charge that they bring. But if they're not, that's it. That's the end of the road. There's nothing else we can do. We can't try the case because the risks are too high with this big hammer of the mandatory minimums. We can't plead for mercy to the judge. We have no other alternative. And so, you know, it's a big power shift to prosecutors, and understandably, prosecutors certainly like having that leverage in the system. But, you know, from an overall justice perspective, I'm not sure that it really makes sense for this category of crimes to do a total power shift from what should be the neutral arbiter in the situation, the judge, instead take all that power and all that discretion and give it to one of the adversaries in an adversarial system.
Well, and I go back to the fact that it is fascinating that all of these organizations are coming together, as well as bipartisan leadership in the State House.
Yeah.
The ACLU, the Idaho Freedom Foundation, coming together. Hopefully that says something about maybe potentially where things should go.
I think so. And, you know, we brought a lot of data to the field because, you know, we want to be tough on drugs. We want to be tough on crime. We certainly don't want to be opening Idaho to a place where drug dealers are going to want to come. But we did a deep dive on this deterrence piece. And, you know, do we think it actually makes Idaho more safe to have these sentences? And we just couldn't find anything supporting that. You know, these sentences went in, this law went in 1992, kind of in the height of the war on drugs. Since that time, Idaho's drug offense rate, and that's the rate, so that's per capita, so it's mm-hmm. it's independent of growth, per 1,000 people, it's gone up 640%. So it's skyrocketed since these laws went into effect, and it's skyrocketed at pretty much the same rate as every other state, whether or not they had mandatory minimums. So there's nothing out there to show that mandatory minimums are doing anything to restrain it. And we've looked at states that have repealed their mandatory minimums. And in most instances, those states actually saw their crime rates go down.
Across the board, because I think that is probably a huge concern for citizens, is you don't want more crime.
Absolutely.
So
right.
If we take away the mandatory minimums, do we see crimes go up, not just in drugs, but everywhere else? But what do other states who have taken away the mandatory minimums, what does their research show?
Their research shows that it's gone down. Now, you know, I don't know. There might be other factors in that. So I don't know that we could draw a pure causal link between that. You know, they might have had better drug treatment programs. There might have been other factors. But they've seen their overall index crime rate, which takes into account violent and property crimes and all that. They have seen it go down in many cases significantly. There's a lot of research out there that shows you actually worsen your crime rate and your recidivism rate with very long sentences, because at some point the person loses their connection to the community. They've lost their ties to the family. Their spouse has left them. Their family has died. You know, they've lost their home, and they've become totally unemployable. And so they are more likely to resort to crime. So you might take some of these folks who would be otherwise rehabilitatable. And some of them are just scared to death, right? It's the first time they've been busted. They're terrified. They're scared straight, but they don't have the opportunity to go straight, right? They're locked up. They're going away for 5 years. So they don't have that opportunity to get back on track. And in some of those cases, you've created a criminal out of a person who maybe otherwise wouldn't have been. But, you know, if I thought that this presented a risk of increasing crime, you know, I wouldn't be working on this legislation. But every bit of data I've seen shows that that's not the case. And actually, the legislation we're bringing, it's a very limited carve-out. It just says that judges can exercise discretion only in those cases where they feel the mandatory minimum presents a manifest injustice and there would be no threat to public safety. So they have to take that into account.
So it's narrow in scope.
It's very narrow. And it might only be 1 or 2% of those offenders. You know, we don't know. But it gives them that escape hatch where it would just be a manifest injustice to proceed with these mandatory sentences.
Well, I want to thank you for coming in today and talking about this. My guest today, State Representative Ilana Rubel, talking about mandatory minimums. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Gemma.